Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, we have a very involved bad, and a crazy martini for conservatives today. We also want to let folks know we're sponsored today by Simply Safe Home Security. Visit simplysafe.com/ricochet. All right, Jim, the good martini today actually deals with the Affordable Care Act. So it's going to be an interesting day, and here we go. This is from Reason Magazine. This is due to the fact that the IRS has basically decided, thanks to the executive order on day one about easing the burden of Obamacare, to turn into a pro wrestling referee when it comes to reporting whether or not you've purchased health care coverage. This is from Reason Magazine. The health law's individual mandate requires everyone to either maintain qualifying health coverage or pay a tax penalty known as a shared responsibility payment. The IRS was set to require filers to indicate whether they had maintained coverage in 2016 or paid the penalty by filling out line 61 on their Form 1040s. Alternatively, they could claim exemption from the mandate by filling a Form 8965. For most filers, filling out line 61 would be mandatory. The IRS would not accept 1040s unless the coverage box was checked or the shared responsibility payment noted or the exemption form included. Otherwise, they would be labeled silent returns and rejected. Instead, however, filling out that line will be optional. Earlier this month, the IRS quietly altered its rules to allow the submission of 1040s with nothing on line 61. The IRS says it still maintains the option to follow up with those who elect not to indicate their coverage status, although it's not clear what circumstances might trigger a follow-up, unquote. So a lot of folks saying, okay, great, at least while we're waiting for Congress to do something in terms of repealing or at least greatly reforming Obamacare and replacing it with something terrific, because we've been promised that. Other people are a little bit worried now that laws don't mean what they're supposed to mean here. And while it might be good for conservatives in this area, it could be a bad precedent down the road. So, Jim, what do you make of this?
Greg, a long time ago, a wise man told me the difference between a conservative and a right-wing radical. The conservative cares about getting what he wants and also how he gets it, whereas a right-wing radical just wants what he wants and doesn't care how he gets it. As much as I would cheer the de facto death of the individual mandate, I'm a little unnerved by the idea of the IRS just deciding, yeah, we're not going to enforce that law. Because I think we can all imagine other parts of the tax code that we would want the IRS to enforce. Because look, in the end, the members of Congress who write the tax code are accountable to the public in a way that your average IRS official is not. Now, having said that, I'm kind of surprised to see these murmurs, because Tom Price is now the Secretary of Health and Human Services. And Greg, as I'm sure our listeners remember, back when they wrote Obamacare, the phrase "the secretary shall" was in there, I think, at least 200 times. And it was enormous number of times, putting an enormous amount of power in the hands of the Secretary of Health and Human Services, including very broad authority to grant exemptions or delays or various other tweaks to the individual mandate for reasons of financial hardship or other purposes. Greg, as you know, clearly Democrats, when they wrote this, they believed that Democrats would be in the White House forever. Who could have foreseen that that would come back to bite them? But right now, as I understand it, Tom Price has a very broad authority to grant exemptions and circumstances where we say we're not going to make you pay the penalty. And I think one idea floating around I'd heard was, he could theoretically just say, yeah, I'm just not doing it for anybody this year. Or he could just give a blanket rule that he will grant an exemption to anybody who requests an exemption from the individual mandate because of financial hardship. So even if you got $1 million, if you don't have health insurance, you don't want to buy health insurance, you write to the IRS, say, yeah, I just couldn't afford health insurance this year. And the IRS would say, okay, we're not going to make you pay the penalty for that. That would be a way of really taking the teeth out of the individual mandate, but not necessarily go through the whole process of full repeal. Now, deep down as constitutionalists, Greg, we'd like to see the law changed. We have this crazy old-fashioned notion that the laws are what matter, not what some government official interprets the law. And if a bad policy is a bad policy, it ought to be repealed, not just ignored for everyone's political convenience. So it's good that the IRS sees what a unpopular and I would argue fundamentally unfair concept the individual mandate is, to basically punish people because they've decided they can't afford health insurance. But I like the idea of trying to get rid of the individual mandate. Just a little wary about how we're going with that. And that does seem like a good, it seems like a nice parallel to our bad martini as well.
Certainly the case. All right, get comfy, folks. We've got a big two-headed bad martini today, and both are covered very well in a column by Eli Lake over at Bloomberg. He's one of the premier national security and intelligence writers out there. He's talking about the Michael Flynn resignation and why it's happening on a number of different levels. First of all, why the Trump administration asked for, apparently, and got the resignation, and what led to it really in the first place. First of all, he says, the White House has such a casual and opportunistic relationship with the truth. It's strange that Flynn's lie to Pence would get him fired. It doesn't add up. He says it's not even clear that Flynn lied. He says in his resignation letter that he did not deliberately leave out elements of his conversations with the Russian ambassador. Skipping down, he says a better explanation here is that Flynn was just thrown under the bus. His tenure as national security advisor, the briefest in U.S. history, was rocky from the start. When Flynn was attacked in the media for his ties to Russia, he was not allowed by the White House to defend himself. Over the weekend, he was instructed not to speak to the press when he was in the fight of his political life. His staff was not even allowed to review the transcripts of his call to the Russian ambassador. And at the same time, there's reports out today, Jim, and you refer to this very much at the top of the Morning Jolt today, that the FBI seems to have evidence that there was regular contact between the Trump campaign and Russia. They don't know the extent of it. They don't know whether there was anything completely improper, but they were surprised by the amount of it and at the levels, the high levels of the Trump campaign that were involved in it, although Paul Manafort says that he was not involved in that in any way, shape, or form, even though the reports suggest he was. So that's one aspect of it. Here's the other one. Back to Eli Lake. There is another component to this story as well. It's very rare that reporters are ever told about government-monitored communications of U.S. citizens, let alone senior U.S. officials. Normally, intercepts of U.S. officials and citizens are some of the most tightly held government secrets. This is for good reason. Selectively disclosing details of private conversations monitored by the FBI or NSA gives the permanent state the power to destroy reputations from the cloak of anonymity. This is what police states do. In the past, it was considered scandalous for senior U.S. officials to even request the identities of U.S. officials incidentally monitored by the government. And when you see the number of anonymous sources in all of these stories, Jim, you get different terms for it now: deep state, permanent state, shadow government, all these different terms out there. And of course, where you focus on this issue apparently is dependent upon your political preferences. If you're a Democrat or lean left, you're focusing on the Trump administration and how deep this issue with the Russians goes. If you're on the right, you're looking at the leakers and how they're undermining this administration. Can't we hate both?
Yes. Yes, we can. Greg, I will adopt the Obama slogan for that. Yeah. It's really weird to see the phrase deep state floating around American politics, because longtime listeners know I lived in Turkey from early 2005 to early 2007. And this is a phrase you heard a lot in discussion of Turkish politics. But one of the reasons you heard it was because the Turks really did have a deep state. And probably, you know, it sounds a little conspiracy theory-ish, but basically the gist is a group of high-ranking, powerful military officials, government officials, people in the national security apparatus who kind of have their own way of doing things. And basically, if not de facto veto power, then an enormous amount of power behind the scenes, shall we say. And look, in a country that has a history of having a military coup roughly a decade, or at least the way it was from about the 60s through the 90s, in Turkey, you had to take that seriously. That at any given point, the Turkish, you know, deep state, which was always kind of whispered and always sounded very sinister, could decide that the elected leaders were messing things up and you know, use the military coup as the control-alt-delete of Turkish politics and say, all right, refresh the system, everyone back to your corners. We're going to give back power to the elected officials in about 2 years, but, you know, don't make me turn this car around, was kind of the gist of the Turkish military and circumstances like that. We're not quite to this point. But if you look at Flynn, it's pretty clear that the leaks against him started pretty early. Now, I am one of those guys who was not really a huge fan of Michael Flynn. You did not see people coming out and singing his praises the way you did with Mattis and various other people who worked with him. You know, Michael Flynn was always a guy who rubbed some people the wrong way, had his own beliefs and ideas that some people thought were kind of kooky or out there or not backed up by the facts. and always for a long time had a perspective on Russia that was way too warm and fuzzy. Having said all that, the fact that somebody, you know, isn't liked, you know, doesn't necessarily mean, well, we got to get rid of him by leaking his as much information about him as we can. He probably should have recognized that any conversation he had with a Russian ambassador was probably going to be recorded by somebody, if not by American intelligence authorities, then by Russian intelligence authorities. And you and I and everyone else listening to this, unless they're somewhere working in the national security apparatus of this country, don't actually know what was said in that conversation. There are a lot of contrary versions of this coming out. It certainly seems like there's enough substance there to make Mike Pence feel like he had been lied to and to make Mike Pence feel like he had been sent out to tell lies on behalf of General Flynn. And that's a big deal, and that's certainly something should be taken really seriously. Having said that, the point made by Eli Lake that you don't usually see this stuff floating around in there. Look, everybody who's showing this stuff to a reporter is breaking the law. I know we're really used to classified leaks in Washington. It's been happening for a really long time. But really deep down, each one of these is supposed to be investigated and prosecuted. And if you're going to leak classified information, you'd better have a darn good reason to do it, not just, oh, I don't like this guy who's a national security advisor. So you can look at, you know, Mike Flynn and kind of feel relieved that he's departing the administration, be uncomfortable with his perspective on Russia and his seeming close ties to people in the Russian government. And still feel a little uncomfortable about how this came out. I saw Bill Kristol, the formerly guy in charge of the Weekly Standard, who's now semi-retired or taking a lesser role there. And he made a statement that if it doesn't necessarily send a shiver down your spine, it definitely should leave you at least a little uncomfortable, where he concludes that I obviously strongly prefer normal democratic and constitutional politics, but if it comes to it, prefer the deep state to the Trump state. Now, a lot of listeners are going to be like, what? And many are going to be like, at the very least, I feel like you should be like, hey, whoa, Bill, put the drink down. All right, take it easy. You know, I'm taking away your keys. Because we don't want the permanent government employee bureaucracy, even in places like the CIA, NSA, Department of Defense, all of these people who've sworn an oath to protect us. And I think the vast majority of them are good people trying to do their best. But they have an enormous amount of power, and they have an enormous amount of access to stuff that is generally considered private. I don't want them going on wars of selective leaking to take out the people in government who they don't like. This goes down a road to places we really don't want to go down, and really kind of subverts public trust in these agencies. So this is going in a really unnerving direction. So even if we don't like Michael Flynn, or you're not such a huge fan of him, I think there's good reason to be really unnerved by the way this went down and the possibility of a war by leaking by the permanent bureaucracy against people in the Trump administration they don't like. Because, man, oh, man, think there are people in the Department of Education who don't like Betsy DeVos, Greg?
Probably so.
Think people at HHS don't like Tom Price? I mean, you know, anybody we like, there's probably somebody in the bureaucracy who has access to information that is at the very least unflattering, that can very easily come to light. And, you know, we saw a lot of this with the Bush administration in the second term, and I don't think there's a healthy chunk of the weed agency is inspired by this. That when you're in the bureaucracy, you're not really supposed to have such a direct hand in the, you know, the blood sport of national politics.
Wow. Very well stated, Jim. And I think of all the people in Washington who have had sharp objects removed from near them as a result of the rise of Donald Trump, Bill Kristol's probably pretty close to the top of the list. Not sure what SimpliSafe can do to protect the deep state from getting your emails, but it can keep your home safe, and that's really good news. There was a pretty alarming news story out of California recently where a woman who was hired to clean homes was stealing from them at the same time. So imagine that. You're paying someone to enter your home and take care of it, clean it up, because you don't have time to do it all the time, and then they burglarize you. So how do you protect yourself from something like this? A regular security system won't protect you from the people you know and trust.
I'm picturing that homeowner saying, I said, clean the house, not clean me out. So here's what you do. You get SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe makes it possible to know what's going on inside your home. If you want to check in, you just live stream footage from the SimpliSafe camera directly to your smartphone anytime you want. You can get text message and email alerts when someone arms or disarms your system, so you can be 100% sure and confident that your home is safe.
For 24/7 protection you can really trust, go to SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. Order a SimpliSafe home security system today and you'll even get our special 10% discount. Go now, simplisafe.com/ricochet. SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. All right, Jim, on to our crazy martini now. And after the 2016 elections, everyone's taking a look at 2018, of course, and the Senate map. Democrats playing a ton of defense. Republicans thinking they can perhaps add to their majority by especially looking at states where Democrats hold seats in states that Trump carried. One of those states is Michigan. Debbie Stabenow has been in office since 2000 when she barely defeated incumbent Republican Spencer Abraham. Her last two election cycles have been laughers. She won by almost 16 points in 2006, 21 points in 2012. She's up again in 2018. Michigan is a state with a Republican governor, Republican state officials in statewide office, large majorities in the House and Senate there. And right now, the speculation about the Senate candidate for Michigan on the Republican side in 2018 is...
It was 1989. My thoughts were short. My hair was long. Caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
So there you have it. Kid Rock, who has apparently lived in Michigan at least since 1989 and has been active in politics. I think he actually was born and raised there, too. He endorsed Mitt Romney. I remember we had a lot of fun with that one earlier in 2016. He was with Ben Carson, who was also from Detroit. And ultimately, he became a pretty big Donald Trump supporter in the general election. According to Roll Call, Kid Rock is being eyed to run on the GOP ticket in his home state of Michigan. A rep for the Michigan Republican Party told us that as far as she knows, no one has reached out to Rock, but she thinks it would be a great idea if someone did. Quote, I have not talked to Kid Rock about that, Michigan GOP press officer Sarah Anderson told Fox News. I think he would be awesome. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a movement for him to run, but to my knowledge, he has not been asked. So the other thing to keep in mind here, of course, Jim, is that there's an open governor's seat in Michigan in 2018. Rick Snyder is term limited. And so I think some of your top shelf Republicans are gunning for that more than the Senate seat. I think Kid Rock would make a very fun campaign, but I'm not sure Debbie Stabenow would be all that worried if that ended up being her competition.
I'm taking a moment to contemplate the title Senator Rock. So a couple of we have a hip, cool, with it listenership, Greg. But just in case you're not recognizing Kid Rock, picture the guy who, when he moves in next door, you just want to move. you know, his appearance is very much that. Eminem would tell him to clean up a little. It's kind of his physical appearance. But having said that, I've always had something of a soft spot for Kid Rock because he always seems to have his heart in the right place. I remember, I think it was a bunch of Super Bowls ago. He wore the flag as a poncho, and a lot of people got very upset by this thing. This is not an appropriate way to display the flag. There are certain rules about this, and he said he did it as a tribute to the troops. You know, heart in the right place, maybe not doing it quite the right way, and then he probably ranks among the figures least likely to endorse Mitt Romney in the 2012 election, but he did it. He said he did it after sitting down with Mitt Romney and listening to Mitt Romney's plan to help Rock's de facto hometown of Detroit and the troubles that it had. Now, the joke that I loved using that year, and I will continue using it till the day I die, is that what really sealed the deal is when Kid Rock asked Mitt Romney to show how devoted he was, and Romney took off his shirt and showed his full back tattoo showing good manners in very gothic font. They really do seem like this mismatched buddy cop movie pair in which, you know, Romney's the straight arrow and Kid Rock is the undercover guy who has to, you know, go into the scuzzy places or something. But Kid Rock does seem like he says he's always described himself as being a little bit more libertarian. I remember him having a polite but firm argument with some other celebrities about the Iraq war. And when everybody else was very anti-war, he was kind of quick to point out that he felt it was necessary and that, you know, criticism of the war should never turn into criticism of the truth. So I've always seen Kid Rock as having his heart is in the right place on a lot of these big issues. I don't know if people would kind of recoil from it and see it as too much of a celebrity candidate, too much of a Jesse Ventura type situation. But then again, we're living in the era of President Trump. So a lot of possibilities that were once unthinkable are now not quite so unthinkable. Having one other point I would just add to this story, Greg. Now, I've seen a lot of thinly sourced, this will get a lot of clicks, you know, overhyped stories. when it's a reaction comment from the state party spokesman who no one has asked him, she hasn't heard of any groups actually trying to recruit them. Kid Rock is not quoted in the story, but she simply says, I think that would be awesome. That's some thin reeds there, Greg. We really want the clicks on this, and that's all we need to start doing the headlines. Will Kid Rock run for Senate? So in all likelihood, he probably isn't. But this is another one where after 2016, it no longer seems quite so unthinkable. And yes, it might be really fun just to watch these Stabenow Rock debates.
I think so. It says deeper in the article, his real name is Robert Ritchie, which leads to an interesting question. If he actually does run, do you put Kid Rock on the ballot or do you put Robert Ritchie on the ballot?
Oh, I think it's pretty clear you'd have to go with the stage name. No, I've always thought another name that gets mentioned every now and then. He's not terribly political, but involved in a lot of good causes. Made an appearance at the 2000 Republican convention. Is the wrestler now known more as Dwayne Johnson, but at the time he was known as The Rock.
Yes.
And so I always figured that he ran. Yes, he would run, and it would stay on there. Last name Rock, first name The. And in that debate, it would say, may I call you The instead of, Rock, instead of being Mr. Rock.
Oh, man. What if it was The Rock against Kid Rock? That would be really confusing.
Rocky race. Sure, Rock versus like Rock that is the kind of concept you think of when you're stoned, Greg.
Very good. Very good. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security. Check out their great home security system options. And don't forget, you can get that special 10% discount, simplysafe.com/ricochet. Join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.